This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for Tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I was just kidding. The man you see is the
place to be. Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So there's too much for you and your big cock of a wasp right to Columbus back.
Then it's an end, J.R.
Listen back to the fucking thing. Then what do you want? What do you want? Listen, you're making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
It's not Austin in L.A. It's not Cabana in Chicago. It's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richard. Sometimes you really dig a girl the moment you kiss her. And then you get distracted by her older sister.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Zero. We're live here on this Tuesday evening. Smackdown instead of Raw flavor for you, but we are here with another episode of Place to Be Podcast. And of course, joining me as always is my PIC. He's a very fine man, and that is Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 516 of the longest running episodic motherfucking gold standard. And it is a Tuesday, very different than our usual Monday, but we are on a
week too.
Yeah, exactly. But we are because we're down the home stretch, my friend. Because we're gonna have a little fun next weekend, which we'll talk about later. Yeah. But good to talk to you, sir. Yeah, right down the home stretch, huh? Getting close. All that talking we did and all the planning and ticket buying and everything, and we're a week and a half away.
It is close. So next week will be WrestleMania week. Busy on the wrestling feed as always, but we wanted to get our show in this week. We'll be taking next week off, so we'll be off back-to-back weeks, but that's why we're giving you back-to-back episodes, but we can cover the business end of that in a little bit. Before we bring in our guest, though, Scott, I guess we should take a minute to discuss the passing of one of your close friends. A guy I got to know a little bit, but of course not as well as you did, and that is a guy that I think we probably talked about way back when, and that is your buddy Mike Robb, who passed away last week, and you did have his memorial tonight, and it sounds like it was a nice time paying tribute to the man. I'll just give some brief thoughts, and then I'll let you talk. I was using him way better, but you know, I knew him very limited, but he was a really great guy. He was the guy whose house we'd go over for pay-per-views when I lived in Connecticut with you for a few years. Always very welcoming, whether I had, you know, Andy was in from out of town, any friends, or my wife was a girlfriend at the time coming over. Always had a lot of food out.
Claire
coming. You know, always great to see him. He was always very welcoming. Each and every month he'd order the pay-per-view, and they were not $10 at that time. So, you know, he was dropping $50 a month or whatever for us to all get together and hang out. And he liked having everyone there. So, you know, again, very limited, you know, experience for me. But in a little bit, I did get to know him. A really genuine guy, really nice guy, funny dude. And I was really shocked. And I didn't know he had, you know, been having some health issues of late. So I was surprised when I saw the post go up. So I'll stop there because obviously he's your buddy. I'll let you talk. But I just wanted to take a minute to pay some tribute to a guy that really – I know got you your start, or at least played a big role in your career in radio. And he was, you know, we've talked about it before, is the guy who ran Get the Point Radio, which where, you know, Main Event and Extra Point for you originated before we turned to this. So it kind of got you started down the wrestling, you know, show path as well. So he kind of means, he really in a way meant a lot to this podcast, even though he's a guy that was never on. So anyway, I'll let you talk for a minute.
Yeah, no, I thank you. Yeah, I Mike, I knew Mike for 24 years. I met him in 1995 when I got my first radio job, working part time You guys both appreciate this, our guest who we'll get to in a minute, and you, JR. I was doing Hartford Whaler games on the AM affiliate, WAVZ, in New Haven. That was my first radio professional paying radio job. And I got to know Mike. He was doing other stuff. And I eventually got a full-time gig there in news. And then when in mid-97, when Metro, which was a kind of these corporate companies, bought the news department, which a lot of this company was doing a lot of back in the day in the Northeast, I was the odd man out because I had the least experience. So I got shunted to the overnight, which kind of sucked. It was better than being unemployed, but Mike, who didn't have to do this, he could have just stuck me in the overnight, left me there, and that would be the end of that. But he said to me, listen, this kind of sucks. How would you like to be my co-host on the morning show, the AM morning show, like the actual morning show? I'm like, mm-hmm. Are you fucking for real? He goes, yeah, you're funny. We get along. Well, a blast. And my board op doesn't fucking talk. So it's like I like to have somebody to bounce like fun stuff off with. I'm like, all right. And it turned out that it was a blessing for me because it kind of opened my personality up and got me to do, you know, and then I got, of course, I was there for another year, and then I went on to my job in Bridgeport for 4.5 years in news, afternoon news. But Mike was it was funny because I remember memories right around when I got on that morning show was when Titanic came out, and we used to make fun of that thing like there was no tomorrow, and looking at the numbers going up and everything. And I remember as we were getting to the tail end of that before I left in June of 98 is when we first started talking about wrestling. And he liked WCW first. As a matter of fact, the first pay-per-view he bought at home, I wasn't there because I was working Sunday nights mm-hmm. part-time. The first pay-per-view he bought was, I think it was Bash at the Beach 98. I think it was the first pay-per-view he bought. And then we told him, yeah, that's nice, but really you should be watching this other stuff. And then he ended up buying in SummerSlam 98, and of course that pulled the ripcord. The first pay-per-view I ever watched with him was actually Survivor Series 98. That was the first one that we ever watched together. And then I went to someone else's house because he wasn't around for Rock Bottom. And then pretty much from like Rumble 99, pretty much for the next like 5-6 years, nonstop. I mean, there was no mm-hmm. break. I was at his house every month.
Yeah, I mean, we were going into when I left in 05, we were still going pretty regularly. I remember watching WrestleMania 21 there. I remember watching Vengeance of Fire was not there. SummerSlam 05, I think we watched there for sure. So.
Yep. I remember Vengeance 04 was, I think, when Andy came, because that was in Hartford, and we ended up – none of us went.
Right.
And I think it was Bad Blood 04, I think, was the Claire one.
Yeah. And the last one I remember watching this right before I moved. It was Unforgiven 05. I definitely remember watching that at Mike's for the Edge and Matt Hardy cage match. I remember we were going crazy for that match there, and that was right around when I was about to move. So it was probably, a week before I left that we went there for the show. So that was – that was the last one I remember watching there. So yeah, it was again a great guy, and I don't even know how into the wrestling he was by the end. I feel like he was doing it more just like to have his friends over and hanging out.
He definitely was. No, he definitely was. I mean, again, we kind of got into we kept watching it, and I remember watching this before I met you. We for a while actually we were going over for Heat. I mean, we were literally going to, at one point we were going to Mike's every Sunday night, whether it was we watched Heat. Or we were watching the pay-per-view. So, and then he finally fizzled out, and we went over the pay-per-views. But I remember going over there for, oh God, I don't remember which one it was. Heat Wave 99, I think he bought. He wanted to buy an ECW show. It was the one where Sid was supposed to wrestle like Taz, I think, for the world title, and it ended up Sid wrestled the first match, and then it was him and Bubba Reynolds, a typical Paul fucking shit show pay-per-view. But anyway, so as time had progressed, then I got out of the radio business and got into the job I have now, and then I met you. He was still in radio, and I was doing sports for him part-time over here down the street at the stations here in Norwalk, Stanford, which have since been sold. And he was starting a streaming. He was pretty much doing streaming, radio streaming. And he's like, hey, you want to do – I need to fill some time. Do you want to do a couple of shows for me? Just one a week for an hour. I said I could use a sports show and I could use a wrestling show. Would you want to do a wrestling show? I said, yeah, sure, why not? So G and I, of course, started – at the time, it was called Winning Point. And then when we obviously started here at Place B Nation, we changed it to Extra Point. But the big one, of course, was Main Event. In the beginning, it was just me, and then actually me and the guy who I said was going to be on a podcast at some point. He didn't join for like 4 years, but Johnny Reckless and I were co-hosting Main Event. And back then, you know, I was trying to fill an hour, so I used to like swipe. Thank God I never got pinched, but I used to swipe like – raw clips off YouTube and all this other stuff. It was crazy, but that got motivated and me to keep doing it and getting into it. And then of course you and I were like, you know, we should probably.
Well, I came on a few times, right? I came on for like an interview, and then I did a couple of the vaults with you guys, right? I remember doing a few. You started reviewing the pay per views, and then that's when. I made the pitch that we should switch to the podcast game instead of streaming. Because I was trying to listen to your show, and it was, you know, it was just hard like to tune in. It was like 11 a.m. on like a Tuesday and stuff. So, but again, it really did lay the groundwork to give the idea to do something like this for you. So that was, again, like you said, he gave you a lot of chances along the way to always get you kind of the next level. You know, he was that guy that always kind of he would move on and then bring you in and it would give you more and more experience. So
exactly. He listened to the shows. He actually was very funny. He did. And he actually started listening to, he listened to my show or our show and he listened to Main Event. And he actually listened to the first few, obviously Mike was a huge comic guy. So he actually listened to the first few Hard Traveling Fanboys. And he was like, oh, great show. I don't agree with like 80% of what they're saying, but it's a great show. It was funny.
Sounds about right.
In the last year or so, he was having some issues. He ended up having a virus that got to his heart, and he battled that for a long time. And he was still – he wasn't doing it every month, but every once in a while he would do – like I went over for SummerSlam, but then he skipped – I don't remember what the September pay-per-view was. I don't remember. And then I went over there for Evolution – the women's pay-per-view. And then I went over, he invited me for Survivor Series, but I couldn't go. He didn't do TLC. And then I went over for the Rumble and that was the last time I saw him. Mm-hmm. And I texted him back and forth and I could tell it was, you know, the illness was really getting to him. And, you know, he's a very proud guy. He's not one of those guys that likes see people seeing him all frail and it was rough. And, he canceled, he was supposed to do the Chamber and he was supposed to do Fastlane. He canceled both of those. And then, I was actually on with, last Tuesday, and I texted him intermittently. I texted him. He texted George, "Happy birthday, Dr. G." And I texted, "But how you feeling?" I'm all right, you know. And then last Tuesday, how about this for impeccable timing? It's amazing the things that have happened in our lives while recording. I mean, you had Big Al while we were on the air practically, Jenny and Mr. Atherton and I were just about to start the episode of Looking Back, which is on PlaceBeNation.com right now, and literally as I was about to start, Heather and George, Dr. G and his wife had just texted me and said Mike passed away, and I said to Andy, I'm like, listen, I don't want us to go any later than this, but you, Jenny, sorry, I don't think Jenny ever talked more in her whole life on a podcast than she did the first like 10 minutes of that show, because I couldn't even speak. I was like barely getting through that first part of the show, but. So this show's this podcast is dedicated to him because he big part of my life professionally and motivated me to have my 11 years in radio and continue doing it, because this is in essence an extension of what I did. I mean, I miss the business? Not really. Do I miss actually being on the air? Absolutely. I'll always miss being on the air. But that's why I love doing this. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like, because this is in essence on the air. It's just, you know, it's accessible now. So, but Mike, you're in a better place now. You didn't like your life at this point, and you. It's hard to say things like that, but I knew Mike pretty well, and I knew that this isn't how he wanted to live, being in a chair all the time, and you know, just. He's in a better place now, and it was nice to, you know, I talked to his wife Kai tonight, and you know her very well, and. And I saw his kids for the first – a few of his kids, because a lot of them live out in California for the first time in a while. So it was nice to see everybody and some of my old radio crew. And Johnny Reckless, of course, was there too. And we'll get – he'll mention Mike because he'll be on next week's big WrestleMania preview of main event WrestleMania preview. So he's going to talk about Mike a little bit. So anyway, thank you for the chance for a few minutes here at the beginning, because he always asked how you were doing when every time I saw him, because he knew you had moved, you know, obviously since you had moved. So in the last, 14 years, I guess. But he always asked how you were doing, and he listened to the shows. So rest in peace, Mike. Hopefully you're in a better place. I think you are. So hopefully you're listening.
All right. Well,
anyway, thank you.
Definitely. Okay, rest in peace, Mike. And I'm glad we get to spend a few minutes.
Yes.
Talk about him. We might be having another memorial service because our guest sounds like he's on life support over there. Peter Winston, are you okay?
Yeah, I had
an asthma attack.
You guys, I had the blue screen of death on my computer.
Yeah.
And I was in a complete panic there for a bit. Not only for this show, but also because I've recorded about 80% of my own show for this Thursday, and I would have been really upset if I had lost that.
The blue screen of death is the worst. I have Macs now, so I don't experience it too much, but my work computers are PCs, and I actually got it three times in the last like 6 months, and it recovered each time, and then I finally was able to parlay into a new computer. So, but it's scary when you get that thing, and you know that everything could just be gone and like that in a blink.
The irony is that I have deferred a purchase of a new laptop so that I can go to Mania. So, like, yeah, it was either hotel stay or get a new laptop, one or the other. Like, I'll get a laptop in the summer.
There you go.
Like, whew, okay, hopefully this hangs on.
You got to go to Mania, and you'll be at the tailgate. We'll talk more about that.
Yes. Oh, yes.
A little absolutely. Bit later tonight. All right, so why don't we go ahead and dive into our show, because we are careening.
Yes.
Down the road to WrestleMania. We are mm-hmm. closing in just a few shows away from WrestleMania 5. So, Scott, why don't you tee us up here tonight?
All right. We are very close to April 2nd from Atlantic City. So the date is March 11th, 1989. And, of course, if we're hearing the great tones of Mr. Peter Winston, that certainly means it is time for Saturday night's main event. Yes. The last one. This is crazy. When was the last time there was like a monthly Saturday night's main event? I mean, there's been one literally every month. That's mm-hmm. that's very rare. I know usually they do like the right at the beginning of the year, and then they do a February one. But depending when WrestleMania is, I don't remember them usually doing a March one.
Last year they definitely did, right?
In
87,
okay.
I think they did too. Because 87 was the Andre
Royal, yeah.
Battle Royal, right? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, the Andre Battle Royal. It just didn't seem like it. So here we are. We are at the Hershey Park Arena. In Hershey, Pennsylvania. Let's double check and see where the live crowd, the live gang was that night, because obviously this was taped.
It was moldy. It was taped February 16th.
Oh, God. So it was taped before the – well, no, it wasn't taped before the heel turn happened, but it was pretty fresh. All right. So March 11th. Let me look here.
It's taped before the garden show you did last
yeah.
week.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So here was the crowd. There was only one house show on this night. And it was down – it was weird, a Saturday, and there's only one house show. It's funny. It was down at the auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee. So they were kind of teetering into NWA country there. Here's the card. No results from Mr. Graham Coffin on the history of WWE.com. But here are the matches. Tito Santana versus Ted DiBiase. Rick Martel took on Mr. Perfect. Kurt Hennig, of course. He's pretty much taken the moniker Mr. Perfect at this point. Red Rooster took on the Brooklyn Brawler. That sounds like a familiar match. The Rockers took on the Brainbusters, who have mm-hmm. literally been like tearing up the house show circuit. Those two teams.
Yep.
We had a great match at the Garden. They had a killer match in Boston, and we'll talk about them later tonight as well. Big John Studd and Akeem. There you go, JR. Maybe they had a better match than the one they had at the Garden. And finally, the main event was the Ultimate Warrior defending the IC title against the Big Boss Man.
Mm.
There you go.
That's a cool match.
Interesting match. Yeah,
it's a. The build to Mania has been interesting because I think we'll see a lot of what we get on this show and on the last couple of house shows diverges from what we end up getting at Mania, a lot of the undercard. It makes me wonder how much – and we'll talk about this probably more at Mania and on the build. But it makes you wonder how much they just like thought the top three matches would sell that card because the rest of it seems very like randomly paired when you look at mm-hmm. where we're headed. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes. So the night that this was taped in Hershey also is a wrestling challenge and a bunch of primetime matches were filmed that night in February 16th. So, yes, a bit of a dated show.
Yeah.
Since our last show, I guess, on TV-wise, on the 225 Superstars, we had a couple of matches for WrestleMania announced, and that's Jim Duggan versus Bad News Brown, Hercules versus King Haku, the Bushwhackers versus the Rougeau Brothers, Brutus Beefcake versus Ted DiBiase, and... the reuniting of Strike Force against the Brainbusters. Of course, Rick Martel came back in January. Now him and Tito are getting back together, getting the band back together to take on the Brainbusters, like you mentioned earlier. Also had an announcement that Run DMC would be performing at WrestleMania, a special rap. We also get footage of Ted DiBiase back at Betteridge Jewelers, a show with his finished $1 million belt. and was very pleased with what he saw. The next week on 3-4, we had more matches revealed for WrestleMania. Mr. Perfect versus the Blue Blazer, Dino Bravo versus Ronnie Garvin, the Hart Foundation versus Honky Tonk Man and Greg Valentine, the Rockers versus the Twin Towers, and Red Rooster versus Bobby Heenan. It was also revealed that Piper's Pit would return as Roddy Piper makes his comeback to the WWF with special guests Brother Love and Morton Downey Jr. And we also had a Brother Love show with Ted DiBiase unveiling the Million Dollar Belt. So we heard the matches here. I don't want to get too much into it, Scott. We are going to do a build show, which will cover all this. But like you can see it already here that why aren't the Rockers and Rougeaus, the Rockers and the Brainbusters getting a match at Mania after they fought all year? You know what I mean? Like it seems like that'd be like the natural match, and you can still do whatever you want to do with Strikeforce against the Twin Towers if you want. So there's a few things in here that are a bit curious. Why aren't we getting the Harts and Rougeaus again? That's been kind of a simmering feud. So we'll see how that plays out. We'll talk about it more. I just wanted to kind of touch on a few points, but it'll be something I want to cover over the coming weeks.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, the world title match is big. The IC title match is big, and I feel like the three title matches are set. And honestly, the other match that seems to be simmering, and I know it seems very low in the card, but at least it seems like there's a build, is between Rooster and Bobby, and we'll get more into that later on in the show. But what do you think, Peter, of the build to this point? Does it seem like they focus so much on Rude Warrior, Savage Hogan that the rest of the card's kind of like...
I would say, and the tag, and I think Bobby's the fourth draw.
And the tag.
I think Bobby Wrestling is the fourth draw when you look at this card. I guess Jake and Andre is a big one. So that's probably your top five, and it seems like the rest are just kind of filling in. Do you agree, Peter?
Yeah, they knew that it was top heavy, and we're selling it on that basis. They knew that nobody was buying the pay-per-view for Duggan versus Bad News Brown.
Perhaps other than me. I don't know.
But that doesn't even make sense, right? Why aren't we getting Duggan Bravo? Like, I'm not dying for that match, but it's one that, you know, they've been feuding. Like, it's just weird. Like, I don't know. I feel like we've seen this a couple times now where they seem to be setting up all these matches. I guess SummerSlam 88, we saw it too, right? Where they're setting up a bunch of feuds and matches, and then we don't get any of them on the pay-per-view. It's kind of odd.
Rosero, you're going to get Dino Bravo versus Ronnie Garvin standing there awkwardly as Jimmy Snuka comes out, and you're going to like it.
Yeah, I do like the end of that match when Garvin just destroys Frenchie Martin. I'll give him that.
Yes.
All right. So why don't we hop into the old Hershey Park Arena? Mm. The smell of chocolate in the air, as it always is.
I've been spending a lot of time in Hershey lately. Me and Chad did In Your House 5 a few weeks ago, and now this.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, beautiful. Great smell of chocolate. Gigantic Reese's peanut butter cups you could buy in the store. Your usual announcers, Vince McMahon and Jesse the Body Ventura. Jesse bringing the big guns tonight, wearing the big Yale sweatshirt. Yes, it was very random. I don't know where that shit comes from. Like, so random.
Was Yale in the news or something at that point? Like, I mean, were they having like an improbable NCAA tournament run or something?
No, I don't know.
Jesse's trying on the Ted Knight from Too Close for Comfort gimmick of the schools.
Random colleges. Yes.
They did not make the tournament in 89, so it had nothing to do with that.
I don't think they won the Ivy in football. I don't know. Did they win? They beat Harvard? Oh, that would have been like 5 months. I have no idea why he's wearing Yale. I really don't. I don't know if it's a inside rib. Did Ebersol go to Yale? I don't know. Is it like some inside rib?
Vince didn't go to Yale, right? Where did Vince go?
Vince did not go to Yale. Vince went to Wheaton? I don't know where he went to college. University of North Carolina? Is he a Tar Heel?
No, I thought he went to like no, he went to military school. That's right, Fishboro Military School.
Yeah, I don't know who went to Yale. I'm gonna check Dick Ebersol and see if he went to Yale.
Okay, yeah, it's just random. Who knows? It's Jesse. He's known for just randomness. But yes, he is rocking the Yale shirt. Tensions are hot here. We start right away with the hyping of Liz's decision of a lifetime. As you might have heard, our opening song kind of plays into that, if you ever had to make up your mind. And that's where she's at here tonight. What is this decision going to be? She has to choose. So after our opening animation, we get the Vince and Jesse welcome us in. They set the stage, and Jesse said he's here to cover wrestling, not women. So,
oh, my God. He did. He did. Ebersol went to Yale.
I don't know. That had to be it then. Yeah. He must have been trolling Ebersol.
He's actually from Connecticut. I didn't know that. He's from Torrington, which is upstate. I didn't even realize Dick Ebersol was from Connecticut. That's hilarious.
There you go.
It says it temporarily, according to his wiki, says Ebersol began his long history with the Olympics when he temporarily dropped out of Yale University to join Rune Arledge and ABC Sports as television's first ever Olympic researcher. And then he went back to Yale. That's
Are you sure
fucking
it's
hilarious.
Yale and it's not Yale State University?
No.
University. Okay. Yale State.
All right. Mean Gene is talking to Ravishing Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan, who want to take Brutus Beefcake out and protect Rick Rude's image. Beefcake will get a rude awakening if he tries to lock on the sleeper tonight. Gene's then with Brother Brutus, who says Bobby is all hot air and Rude's hair has no body, but he will change that, just like he did to our old friend Ron Bass. Brutus Beefcake and Rick Rude are our opening matchup here. Jesse Ventura rips Vince, who are always picking against the Heenan family. Vince reminds us about Beefcake shearing Bass's head on the last Siamese main event. And, of course, this is an MSG rematch from last month. Beefcake gets a warm welcome as he struts out, shows off his big shears. Beefcake looks all jacked up here. We start with a stalemate lockup as Jesse notes that Rude's tights have Warrior airbrushed on them. Beefcake heats up and tosses Rude around and kicks and punches. Rude has had no offense at all. He's favoring his back until he finally hits an inverted atomic drop to stop the barber. Rude gets right to work with strikes and a snap suplex for two before hooking a chin lock. Beefcake breaks the hold as Andre joins Bobby at ringside. Beefcake comes back with an inverted atomic drop, but Rude cuts him down and throws him outside, where Andre just sits on him a few times and chokes on him. Jake the Snake shows up, makes a save to a pop, but Rude jumps him as things have really broken down. The ref calls for the bell. Rude and Andre beat down Jake until Beefcake makes a save. Big John Studd ambles out. He gets face-to-face with Andre until Jake throws Damian in. That clears the ring. And this is the first portion of what could have been a solid match, but it just never really got rolling. You can see both guys are sending, and it shows in their work. The crowd's getting into them. They're really kind of establishing themselves. They're two guys that were kind of on for their ring work in their early days, but they both made a lot of progress. We've covered Rude's progress for sure in the ring, and he's starting to really get better and better. And same with Beefcake, who's improving too. I thought the finish here protects both, sets up Mania well with everyone but Beefcake, who's not involved at all in this. But I went 2 stars. Again, I thought it was, building momentum. I thought it was a step behind what we talked about last week, Scott, though, with that February match. I went 3 stars to that one. I went 2 for this one here tonight, mainly because we just kind of get the aborted ending. But, again, it was fun, and it sets up a bunch of Mania. And that's more important on a Saturday's main event than any kind of work rate. So what'd you think about this?
I agree with you. I gave it 2 stars, which is a half star less than I gave the match at the February pay-per-view. The February house show. There's a theory that you brought up, I think, on the last show. At the last house show, and I'm curious, Peter, your thoughts as well, because we talked about this on the house show with Jenny, that maybe they were really working the Rude Beefcake thing for the possibility of Rude winning the IC title at WrestleMania and having an extended feud with Beefcake and maybe some title matches. So they wanted to build a little juice for it, not necessarily Beefcake beating him, but at least having a juicy feud, for the time being to lead up to eventually maybe Warrior winning it back or whatever. So they keep doing it, and now they do it on national. It's one thing on house shows, local crowd sees it, but to put it on the national show certainly begs the question that maybe this was on their mind, that they were thinking about it as a possibility for a future extended feud. Having said that, the match is good. It's all right. The ending's a little fucked up as we got to push the Andre, Jake stuff. But I think here, we were talking on another topic on the last show, JR, about the whole Andre Jake Stud thing. Here, I think that Stud has now become like an enforcer, because if they were planning on Andre versus Stud, then why have Jake there at all? Why don't you just have Andre beat the shit out of Beefcake and Stud come in and save him? Why would you add Jake to the mix if Jake's not going to be in the match with Andre? So I think at this point they did decide that Stud was a fucking hot mess. And
I still think all along he was supposed to be the ref. I don't think we were ever going to get that match at Mania. I think they were hoping for it maybe after Mania through the summer. Peter, what do you think about that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they were just going to set up the program by having him be the ref. Because you had to stop the Jake and Andre thing somewhere. So it's kind of a natural stopping point. But back to Rude, I love the theory that you guys posited on the February MSG show episode from last week about the misdirection of kind of having a light, ever so light deep push for Rude to make it even more shocking for what's to come. I never really thought of it. From that perspective, but that does seem to make sense. Speaking of things that seemed off about this match, I don't know if the WWE Network audio on my TV was a little fuzzy, but
no, it's fucked up.
It was fucked up. Yeah, no, mine was too today.
Because it was like I wanted to bust out my VHS copy of this Saturday Night's Main Event because I was like, what the hell's going on?
Have you
here?
Watched that copy? Because I'm curious. I just assumed the master tape was fucked up because it was like way overmodulated.
Yeah, Vince is like screaming. Yeah, it's bad.
Actually, yeah. I the last time I watched it was 5 years ago when I first started going through my tapes. That was the first one I put in because I remember this Beefcake Rude match right off the bat and just Rude's giant bushy hair. Like, oh yeah, that's right. They tease a haircut mm-hmm. with him, but it was not to be. Actually, there are several things I liked about this match. We get a preview of the Booty Man because you notice Beefcake kind of shaking his head. He was the original Mr. Ass long before
he was, yes.
Billy Gunn.
Yeah,
just
he was
been ripping
yeah.
him off for years.
Yeah.
Also, I noticed that Beefcake really likes putting his crotch in Rick Rude's face because they did that. They did the corner mount punches a couple of times, and I couldn't help but notice how close his junk was to Rude's nose. And then I was really mad when Rude did an inverted atomic drop because I was like, no, Rude should be the one taking the atomic drop because he's always in such horrible pain. And luckily they did get to that. But I was so glad that our hero, Andre the Giant, our MVP of now and forever, showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the king of Saturday's Main Event.
Yes. When the snake comes out, I like that Andre doesn't run away. He just sort of has his like own meandering walk away, like, all right, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done with you for now.
Okay, guys, got to go. It's like his own thing. When Andre is Andre just does not sell for Brutus when he like does like the forearm in the back. It's because Andre doesn't need Hogan anymore, so he doesn't got to do any favors for Beefcake. But the Big John Stud push annoyed me for one reason, and this is going to take me back to when I'm 9, 10 years old watching this. When he walk up the steps, Vince would be like, "Here comes a real giant," and I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about, Vince? He's clearly smaller
right.
than Andre." He's like, "Oh well, here's a giant." It's like, okay, it's like putting a 32-ounce bottle next to a 2-liter bottle and saying, look at these. These are two giant bottles. Like, yeah, but one is
now here's a real bottle.
The other. I mean, stop it.
Not to mention, 4 years ago, like, he was championing Andre as the real giant because Big John said is pretending to be as big as Andre, pretending not to have been slammed. It's, it's just whatever, classic 80s.
I'm willing to forgive that, mm-hmm. but like when there's just such a noticeable difference, and also the fact
right.
that Stud looks so horrible, it's like
yeah.
we're watching this on color TV, but he looks like he's in black and white.
Yes.
Like, everybody else is in color, and he's in black and white, like it's Pleasantville
fucking
or some
Wizard
shit.
Of Oz, yeah.
Yeah.
He does. He does feel very old. Like it, the only way they could have made it feel older is if they brought Ken Patera back and had him with him again.
Yes.
Yeah. Nah, it's rough. And
by the way,
we have even a more house show.
Speaking of Ken Patera, Twitter follow of the night for me is Wrestling Arcade, where they do the kind of old school graphics of mm-hmm. Like classic wrestling moments. I don't know if you guys follow that. I've put a few like in our live chats or whatever. It's at Wrestling Arcade, and he does like these old style, I guess would it be 16-bit, you think, or is it 8-bit? I don't even know. Videos. Like he did one of Akeem, one main game becoming Akeem. It's just like little gifs and it's like real quick hit ones. But he did the one of Patera and Saito throwing the boulder through the fucking window of the McDonald's. Mm. And it's really, really funny. The newest one he does was Nash throwing Mysterio into the side of the trailer. He's just did a lot of really cool ones. He did one of Valentine and Piper doing the dog chain match. So anyway, I highly recommend it. It's a great follow. I think pretty much daily he's going out there. Actually, one of the newest ones he did was Boss Man driving the car through the cemetery of Big Show hanging onto the casket and falling off the casket. So anyway, well worth your time, along with my boy Rex Chapman and Blocker Charge, my two top Twitter recommendations.
Yes, I follow the Rex Chapman one, but yeah, I gotta follow the
Wrestling Arcade.
I like that. That's pretty cool. I've seen it on our stream. I have to actually officially follow it, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah, the Akeem one is great. It just kind of emerges from the Oh, he did. Dude Love jumping off his friend's roof too, Mick Foley. So it's got a lot of cool ones out there. Anyway, all right, let's move on. We go backstage where Hulk Hogan is talking about Liz and Bad News Brown. He's got a busy night tonight. Jesse Ventura in his Yale shirt is then with Bad News, and Jesse shits all over Jack Tunney and says Liz is doing favors for him, buying into Bad News as fake news. Do you think this is like one of the earliest Jesse conspiracy theories? Do you think this is what kind of set him on the path? Here, this is one of his earliest ruminating that Liz is blowing Tunney to get keep Savage away from Bad News.
I don't know, but all this oral sex innuendo definitely would have fit into the Place to Be Nation After Dark chat.
Yes,
yes, I think it did actually a few days ago.
No one does Sundays like Place to Be Nation. That's for sure. Who would have thought Calvin Crowell, big oral sex aficionado. All right, here we go. So Jesse, again, really shitting on Liz and Tunney. So Savage hasn't defended Liz, but Hogan has, kind of pointing out that Savage is usually right and Hogan's a loser, and if he's defending Liz, then she's probably dirty. Bad News says Liz is the issue in all this. She caused a problem with the Mega Powers, got in the way of the title. He calls Hogan a dummy, says nobody with a woman in his corner will ever be Bad News. And Jesse thanks Bad News for exposing the seedy underside of Tunney's corrupt presidency. So Jesse, very much buying into the Bad News Kool-Aid here, thinking that Tunney is corrupt. Gene then talks to Hulk Hogan, who tells Gene not to repeat Bad News Brown's lies. Hogan says Savage's actions hurt Liz even more than Bad News's. Savage puts Liz between them and destroyed the Mega Powers, and that hurt her the most. Hogan said Liz put him over the edge, but has seen Savage's jealousy for a while. He's going to stick up for Liz and defend her honor tonight, which Macho would never do. And at Mania, he'll take his belt back. That's a good promo. Even though, what is with Hogan in 89 and maybe a little bit into 80, since 88, where he sounds like he's crying in his promos. Like, what is this new take? Is he, like, practicing his acting or what? It's real weird.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
He's got this
weird
cry tone.
He's a sensitive new-age guy.
Oh, God. What is it? It's like, Elizabeth. Yeah, it's just, like, this weird. Like, he's still doing the Hogan, like, noises and sounds, like, the tone, but he's, like, it just sounds, like, warbly, like he's about to cry at any minute.
Like Bobcat Goldthwait?
Yeah, I guess he's trying to, like... Or, like, episode one, big... You know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, yeah. Hey, it's just going to wind down. It's odd. But it's very... I don't know if he's just trying to convey, like, that he's really upset and broken up over what's going on, so he thinks, like, this is what you sound like when you're, like, kind of, like, super emotional. I don't know. It's very odd. But another thought I had too is like, how would Twitter react today to this feud that's suddenly been like all about Liz? Like, do you think it would be like or even like whatever to see IWC? Do you think this is like Steph's dog getting in the way of Jericho and Triple H and like other angles where like, you know, oh, they have this ready-made feud, Hogan versus Savage, and now it's just all about Elizabeth. Like Hogan's, you know, everyone's talking about Elizabeth. Like, I feel like that would have been a derisive moment if this was in the internet era, this feud.
Bad News Brown would be a super over baby face.
Oh, for sure.
In this day and age.
And they would just be bitching. They'd be like, oh, you know, we had Hogan and Savage. It was an easy story to tell. Easy story. And I had to put Liz. It's all about Liz. Hogan, everyone's talking about Liz. And, you know, why is she the focal point? The saddle should be the focal point. Eh, I'm going to go watch AEW. You know what I mean? Like that. I feel like that's exactly what would be happening right now.
The only difference here is the breakup was about her.
Well, like, that's what I'm saying. That would be the bitch, though. Because, like, instead of them just fighting over the title and, like, that she had to be the reason for the breakup and broke up the Mega Powers. I don't know. I just feel like that would be a thing these days. Like, I guess
the thing would be if you're looking for a more line in the sand – no pun intended since you mentioned Triple H – more line in the sand way of breaking them up, you could have Savage talk about the jealousy of I'm the champion and he's getting more pub and that kind of thing. You can make it more right. Basic. But they thought that I mean, Elizabeth really was the only thing they could really come up with.
Yeah.
And
well, Savage kind of works in the, you know, you really wanted a title shot, but you weren't balls enough to ask me for it. I mean, he did work some of that, right. But it's really been a love story. I mean, at least since Survivor Series or so. We talked about it a lot on the main event a few weeks ago. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right. That brings us to our big match here. Hulk Hogan, Bad News Brown. Fun on paper. Brown's really doubled down on his Liz bashing, just keeping it up. And now that, like, Savage has turned and he's in on it and Jesse's in on it, it's like really piling up. Hogan gets a big pop. Jesse says Bad News will pull out all the stops in this big match, and indeed he does jump Hulk after the off the bell. Bad News punches and chokes away. Jesse says Hogan took Brown too lightly. Hulk dodges him elbows and fires up and unloads, sending Brown outside. Hogan slingshots him back in, and Vince says this will be a romp him, stomp him affair. Hogan keeps mauling Bad News until Brown catches him with a blow that rattles him. Brown lands a few shots, but eats a boot on a charge, and Hogan Atomic drops him right out of the ring. Hulk follows outside and brawls out there, eventually battling over a chair. Hogan slides in, and Bad News paces around looking for weapons. Brown finds a shovel, and after a break, he's trying to get in the ring with it, but Hogan slides out and stops him. Back inside, Hogan peppers Bad News, but gets caught with a hard clothesline. Bad News batters Hogan, getting two on a leg drop. He slides outside and stalks Liz, but Hogan makes a save before getting run into the post. Back in the ring, Brown slugs away some more and grabs the mic to talk shit, but follows that by whiffing on a ghetto blaster after he tried to call his shot. Jesse says Bad News fucked up by telling Hogan what was coming. Hogan shakes off some strikes and hulks up, hits a high knee and a leg drop for the rare pinfall loss for Bad News. I was actually waiting for the DQ, but never came. Bad News actually eats a pin. Hogan poses with Liz as Jesse shits on him and says he's a backstabber. Standard Hogan match. It veered off a bit with some brawling and wilding out on the floor. I thought Brown looked good, a lot of aggression and mixed up offense. Hogan sold and hit the quick finish, but it worked well in his formula. And Hulk now moves on to WrestleMania to challenge Randy Savage. So, Peter, I went 2.5. I thought this was perfectly fine. Standard signings main event match with a little bit of brawling mixed in. And I was shocked that Bad News took that pin.
Yeah. I'm thinking back to when Scott was reading where the house show circuit was on this night in 89. And I was kind of hoping that it was going to be one of those Bad News versus Randy Savage heel versus heel matches that were on a few shows between the main event and Mania. Because if I could travel back in time and see any match live, I think it would be one of them. The Bad News versus Savage, because some of the Bad News was working as a babyface, and then other Savage was working as a babyface, and apparently the crowds were crazy for it. Hogan, he's so great at being vulnerable, like holding on to Bad News's foot was particularly, it's kind of jarring to see, but I want to talk about my hero, my main man, Bad News Brown, because his character work is second to none. He is the logical extension to me of Dr. D, David Schultz, yep, who I also love. I can picture Bad News Brown choking out John Stossel or whatever.
Picture him yelling at his wife and kids at a cabin or whatever the hell that was on TNT. Yeah.
I do have a couple
fucking shelf.
Couple of light critiques for Bad News. He needed to mark where he left stuff because he couldn't find where he left that shovel. And he's like goes to all around the ring, and then he goes to the back, and it's like one of those shovels that they use to clean the ice during the commercial breaks. I was like, does Bad News like want to make money in snow removal at this point? It was like one of the big metal ones. Now, the other thing is that if you think over the last 25 years, guys like Sid and John Cena have gotten a lot of grief from the internet wrestling community for being a little loud calling spots. But let me tell you something. Not one time did either of those guys get on the house mic and start calling spots to their opponent the way Bad News Brown did in this match. And like, oh, it's ghetto blaster time. And somehow it was a scandal when they exposed the business to, you know, get the State Athletic Commission out of there. I actually gave this match 28 stars because the reason why is I had a lot of stars left over from watching a lot of Patera Bravo matches, so I've decided to use all of them on this match. Hogan is red hot. Bad News, he's just so great. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love
him. I gave this 2.5 stars. This was a good match. Hogan's Hogan. He's getting kind of back in the groove now. Looking a little bloated, not the jacked up award, but looking actually a little bloated on this night. But you know, crowd was good and Bad News was moving around the ring pretty well. And, told a good story. I was surprised that Bad News ate the pin, to be honest, but if you're going to eat a pin to anybody, eating one to Hogan's not the worst thing in the world, but you know, the match was solid. And I know we're going to see Savage later in the show. And they're going to pump this up. And I know we have some huge, you know, they're going to really delve into this on the Cindy circuit and on primetime over the next few weeks. So, we're on the rocket ship now, big time, towards April 2nd. But the match was solid. The Bad News Duggan thing, I don't get that, considering he's not even on the show. So I don't know. that thinking made no sense to me. But this match is good. This match is good.
Just really gives something to do, you know?
Yeah, very strange. Very strange. So, all right. Short show, so we'll take a break. Not too bad so far. You know, we're 2 for 2. Both matches pretty good, JR. Right? Pretty solid. Peter, not too bad, you think?
Yeah,
pretty solid. All right, well, well, when we return, we will we'll be back with two more matches, including the national debut of Ted DiBiase's new trinket. And, of course, we'll have more Mega Power breaking up stuff. In fact, Elizabeth has to make a big decision tonight. All that and more coming up after the break. But first this, because...
I think Miss Elizabeth blew Jack Tunney to get her kid into Yale, McMahon.
You know what I'm saying? Yo, Black, I'm not playing. Need to go with this and go with this with no delay. And see, in actuality, wonder can it be? I made it look easy because it is to me. Anytime capacity was filled, tried to rock it. Anytime my honey gave us play, tried to knock it. Never was a fool, so we finished school. Never see us wet, and you'll never
promotional
see us cool.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett, the founder and president of Global Force Wrestling, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we be back talking Science Bit Events from March 1989. And you know, Scott, we've talked about it via WrestleMania weekend, next weekend. And whatever you think of WWE or WrestleMania for what it is, the weekend itself, to me, is the draw. Whether you're going to the other indie shows or, you know, take part in a tailgate. Just like, to me, it's like a reunion weekend these days.
Yes.
That's what I felt the last few years anyway. Like, you know, there's been derisive comments. Oh, you know, you pay for that. Maybe it was it. But whatever. To me, to get to see everyone from around the country, around the world, all hang out once a year. We come together and party and gather for the whole weekend. It's a ton of fun. And I'm looking forward to you getting to be part of it, because when you did it last at 29, it's very different from, like, these days.
Right.
You know, we hung out all weekend, but it just, I don't know, it was just different than the camaraderie and what we've built over the last few years.
Absolutely.
So it'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely.
Last year, of course, the heavily publicized NOLA experience was a throwback for me. I felt like, you know, I barely slept. I ran off alcohol, bounced from room to room, did what I wanted. And it was a lot of fun. And I really feel like I kind of recaptured my youth. So I'm looking forward to doing it again. I'm going to try and recreate the magic in a couple weeks. Really get that electricity flowing through my body. Get some electric youth, which, of course, is the song you hear underneath us here tonight. The number one song in the nation. But before we get to Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner, I just want to talk about what is going on in the world of Place to Be Nation. Very busy week on the Pop feed. New hard-traveling fanboys, Greg and Nick, went off the page to check out Marvel Rising Secret Warriors. And they are wrapping up, of course, what is Captain Marvel Month. They actually had a new show that dropped, or at least it's coming today, right? Didn't it drop today? I guess today that was the one I was thinking of.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, that be that. So check that out. Brand new NBA team. The boys gave a quick hit March Madness 2019 preview. Of course, that is still ongoing, so not too late to see what their thoughts are. And you can shit all over them if they were wrong. Jason Sherman joined host David Sunday for the newest edition of the Sunday Groove, looking at part two of their look at albums released between 1998 and 2003. How do you guys say it? It's weird that we went from 2000 to 20, like when we hit 2010. Isn't that odd?
I say 2003.
That is very funny. Yes.
All right, you guys say it right. Anyway, that's that. Scott, joined Andy Atherton, John D'Amato, and Dr. G going through a trek through time with a new year in pop, looking at the year of 1974. And then, Scott, you mentioned that you and Jennifer Smith joined Andy for the newest Looking Forward, Looking Back, the movies of Fall Winter 2018 Revisited. So be sure to peep that. A couple of shows featuring you and Mr. Atherton. Ben Morse welcomed in the manager, Todd Weber, to finish up their look at 1969 and a new Marvel Age masterclass. And, of course, Todd was also joined by Tim Cable for a look at the Uncanny X-Men 135 in the most recent edition of Conversation Comics. Brand new Songs of Friends dropped as well. Kelly and Steve, you can check that out. They did a little bit of Chili Peppers. Did some Temptations as well. And a brand new Binge Please with some Netflix news. And then Jordan Duncan joins to talk Abducted in Plain Sight. So plenty of going on the Pop feed. Be sure to check that out. Over on the PTBN Wrestling feed, which is where we reside, Scott, you, me, and Jennifer were here last week looking at that February Night House show. So revisit that if you happen to miss it. Me and Chad have been rolling hot and heavy almost into the end of 95. We checked out the Christmas Night 1995 edition of Nitro, which had a sneaky good Ric Flair, Randy Savage world title match buried in there. And of course, our next episode, which I think maybe next week, we're looking at Starcade, and that'll be our final 1995 show. And then we'll be into 96. So excited about that. And also, episode 3 of Talkin' WCW dropped. Tim, Jenny, and Greg look at three matches from the legendary catalog of the Nature Boy, woo, by God, Ric Flair. So be sure to check that out. Great to listen. I just finished it today and really enjoyed it. PlayStation.com, back up and running. We'll be having a lot more written content coming in the days and weeks to come, especially once we get past Mania. But be sure to give a like to the PTBN Greatest Candy Tournament Facebook page, as well as on Twitter, where polls are going out daily. Round 2 kicks off on Wednesday. Champion crowned Easter Sunday. A lot of great engagement so far on social media about this, which we're really excited about. It's been a lot of fun trying to narrow down the greatest candy, which is fitting tonight since we are in Hershey Park. So all that said, we're going to turn things over to Scott Criscolo now to talk a little pop culture in March of 89.
Thank you, JR. And just a correction here. The document was that I use is incorrect. We have the correct artist, and it was the correct album, but the number one song that week was Debbie Gibson's Lost in Your Eyes. But Electric Youth was the number one album, so we were right in that aspect. But from that album, Lost in Your Eyes, which with all the with what happens next weekend, we may have all eyes closed or eyes wide shut. That's number one, Lost in Your Eyes by Debbie Gibson. Number two, The Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics. Number three, You Got It, The Right Stuff by your wife's favorite band, Mr. Rosero. New Kids on the Block. I think about that, huh?
K-O-T-B.
She probably had. Number four, Roni by Bobby Brown. That's a Pete Winston hit right there. Number five, Paradise City, big hit from Guns N' Roses from the awesome Appetite for Destruction album. Number six, Surrender to Me from the movie Tequila Sunrise. Ann Wilson and Robin Zander. For those who know, Robin Zander was the lead singer of Cheap Trick. Number eight, The Lover in Me by Sheena Easton. Number nine, My Heart Can't Tell You No by Rod Stewart. And number 10, Straight Up Now Tell Me, Paul Abdul. So there you go. So the number one song this week, the poll came out on this day, the exact day, Saturday, March 11th, 1989. Number one song, Lost in Your Eyes by Debbie Gibson.
So but it wasn't Electric Youth?
The album Electric Youth was number one. No, the list I was using was wrong. The album Electric Youth was number one. But
so
the song
just destroyed my whole thing.
No, because I don't think No, you didn't actually, because I don't think Electric Youth was actually ever a number one song. And if it is, use it again. So there you go. So In the theaters, JR, only one movie this week. So we got a nice quickie this week in the theaters. A fine fantasy film, kind of infamous. It is called The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. The Adventures of what?
Pete and Pete.
Pete, yes. Oh, Sheriff Pete. My God, I can't wait to see Sheriff Pete.
All right, here we go. An unnamed war-torn European city in the Age of Reason, amid explosions and gunfire from a large Ottoman army. Ottoman army outside the city gates, a fanciful touring stage production of Baron Munchausen's life and adventures has taken place. In a theater box, the mayor, the right ordinary Horatio Jackson, reinforces the city's commitment to reason by ordering the execution of a soldier who had just accomplished a near superhuman feat of bravery, claiming that his bravery is demoralizing to other soldiers and citizens. I've lost complete interest in this movie. Starring John Neville, Sarah Polley, Eric Idle, Oliver Reed, Uma Thurman, Bill Patterson, Peter Jeffrey,
young Uma Thurman,
Sting. I'll let you decide which one. Terry Gilliam and Alison Steadman.
That's definitely the man called Sting. Baron Munchausen must be hanging out with guys with face paint. And Uma Thurman's got to be what, like 20? It's got to be one of her first movies.
Well, she was born in 1970, so not
she
even.
She was 20. She was 19. Yeah, 19. Yeah. So, wow. Anyway, that was the only movie that came out. So
it was long before Kramer got her number.
That's right. Quick check of box office. Let's see, weekly chart. Rain Man was doing very well. Let us check the chart index and go to that month.
Was he reading all the DVDs on a shelf?
Yes. DVDs on a shelf. No. Let's see, March 10th. There we go. A week of March 10th, Lean on Me, the awesome movie with Morgan Freeman, was making almost $5.8 million. Skin Deep, number two. Tied for third, JR, Police Academy 6, City Under Siege.
Yes.
And then chances are that was tied for third. So those, they were tied, that and Police Academy. Rain Man was down to fifth, but still making money. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure at sixth, and New York Stories, I think that's Woody Allen. No, that's Disney. Seventh. So Lean on Me, great movie, Morgan Freeman. Tremendous movie. Was number one.
City Under Siege is a weird one. I feel like it was like they're all good. But the first four are kind of the classics. I still like, I think five is kind of like in the vein, even though is that one without, is Mahoney not in five?
Is that Matt McCoy? Is Assignment Miami Beach five?
Yeah.
Yeah, then that's Matt. That wasn't that. Yeah, Gutenberg wasn't in that.
Right, he's gone, right, Matt for that one. So that's kind of the first one that's really not kind of outside the official canon, but it still kind of felt like treading the line. Six and seven feel like completely different series in a way. I mean, he's still got a bunch of the usuals, obviously. Michael Winslow,
right,
who's never going to quit that fucking series.
Bubba Smith.
The late David Groff. Yeah, Bubba Smith.
Bubba.
Yeah, he's still got friggin' Punky Brewster's dad in there.
Leslie Easterbrook.
Lassard.
What's her face?
Yep.
What was her? That was
Callahan. Hooks is in there. So I mean, you still got a lot of the same, but it's just, I don't know. It feels a little bit different the last two. Someday we've been talking about the Police Academy podcast series forever on Police to Be Nation.
Absolutely. Well, maybe you and Mister. I know you've already picked you and Andy's laughing theater movie. I know it. I won't say what it is. It'll be a surprise. You have a great pick, but maybe the original Police Academy. That might be a fun little jaunt. Anyway, so just one movie this week, and Lean on Me, good old Morgan Freeman, one of his better early roles, is leading at the box office. All right, in the NBA, there were seven games. Celtics were not in action, Mr. Winston. The high score...
you mean Peter was in room for the Baltimore Bullets at that point?
Yeah. Baltimore Bullets.
How speaking dare of, you, sir.
The Bullets weren't even playing that night either. The high score on this night in the seven games was everybody's favorite asshole, Isaiah Thomas. 34 points as the Pistons beat the Sixers. Your boy Barkley,
asshole Mitchell Kuhn, but nope. Mitchell.
No, he's everybody's least favorite asshole. Anyway, your division standings: the Knicks leading the Atlantic at 41-19. Celtics, Peter, third place, under 500. But that was, we talked about this, right? Wasn't this the year that Bird's back was shot? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that.
Oh no, his Achilles. The back was next year or the year after.
Okay. Cleveland leads the Central. Utah leads the Midwest. And the Lakers leading the Pacific. All right, let's go to the frozen pond and take a look at our see how our Bruins, our Whalers, and other teams. I have to go to the other page here. March 11th, 1989. I wonder how PC was doing during the season, JR. I'm pretty sure 89. I think Gordy, what's his face? The guy that fucking Rotella hates. I think he was a head coach. Chiesa or whatever the fuck his name is. I think he was coach, right? Because Pitino was already with the Knicks. So, all right.
Pitino left right after the Final Four, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And then was it, what's his fate? No, that wasn't until the late 90s.
87-88 was Chiesa. Barnes was 88-89, so he was already there. And they lost in the first round of the NCAAs in this year.
Rick Barnes, Providence, the last team he coached without the that didn't have the color orange. And since then, he went to Clemson, Texas, and Tennessee, all orange.
Orange freak.
Anyway, eight games in the NHL. The Bruins, Mr. Winston, at home at the Old Garden. A 6-6 tie with Steve Bennett's Buffalo Sabres. Your scorers... let's see who scored for the Bruins. I have to put up the box real quick.
6-6. I fondly remember ties.
Yeah, 6-6. Let's see. For the Bruins, John Carter with a goal. Craig Janney, Randy Burge, Big Ray, Bob Sweeney, and Ray again. So Ray had a pair of goals.
That was definitely the 1989 Bruins.
Yeah. Yes. I loved Randy Burge, a good player. The rest of the games on that night, let's see, any of our other teams? Oh, the Whale lost at home lost in Montreal 5-3 to the Canadiens. I believe Sheriff Pete's Blackhawks got blown out by Philly, and Mr. D'Amato's Rangers lost 4-2 to the Caps. So the Red Wings lead the Norris, Calgary leads the Smythe, the Canadiens pulling away in big time, and the Bruins only have 75 points, and they're in second. The Canadiens at 103. And the Caps, in that tight race in the Patrick, lead the Rangers by two. And there was a birth on this day. And sadly, this guy, he was an actor. This guy since has already passed away in an accident. Anton Yelchin, who, for those Star Trek fans, was the actor who played Chekhov in the three new movies, the new Star Trek from 09, Into Darkness and Beyond. He was born on this day, March 11th, 1989, but he has since already passed away. He died in a terrible accident on June 18th, 2016. He was crushed by his own car. It's a weird story, but it's very tragic.
Did he fix
anyway,
the tire or something and it fell on him?
No, I know, right? No, apparently he was getting out of his car in his home, and the car, I guess, was not in park, and it slid down the driveway and pinned him to the side of the driveway. You know, he had like one of those high driveway, like rock walls, and the car pinned him and it crushed his chest. Very strange. It's almost like a scene from Final Destination.
Is that where they get the idea of Breaking Bad when he kills one of the twins?
So anyway, Anton.
I'm sad to say my grandpa went the same way. Exact same way.
Seriously? Right.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was going to say. My grandpa. The way you said that, like the Waltons.
No,
Pappy Winston went the same way.
It was a zipline accident.
He liked choke sex. Anyway, so Anton Yelchin was born on this date, March 11th, 1989, and had passed away in 2016 at the age of 27 from this accident. So anyway, I just wanted to, that was the one birth on this day. So there is
a car in 2016
corner.
That fucking, or what was it? 2016 he died?
2016.
Who even has a car that like lets you get out when it's not, I thought this was like 1985 or something. I could see, you know,
no,
like,
here's the story.
The
car's here's
like,
you
can't, I mean, I don't think I can even open the doors of my car if they're not in fucking park.
I know. Well, here's the story.
He's a movie star.
This is what it says on Wikipedia. On June 19th, 2016, Yelchin was found stuck and pinned between his Jeep Grand Cherokee and a brick pillar outside his house in Studio City, California, in what was described as a freak accident. As Yelchin got out of his car, the vehicle apparently rolled back down the driveway, which was on a steep incline, and trapped him against the pillar and a
security
fence.
How did he already get to – I don't understand this. How did
I don't either.
I feel like I got to have a Jeff Lawrence wrestling just to talk about Jeff. But how did he even get all the way back – like, how did he run? How did he get to the? Why is he in front of the wall? First of all, how did he get there?
I have no idea.
It's not like the car is going 90 down the fucking driveway. It's probably slowly rolling. I just don't get it. I cannot mentally picture how this would have happened.
He died from injuries sustained during the accident later that day. The L.A. County Coroner's Office identified the cause of death as blunt traumatic asphyxia and stated that there were no obvious suspicious circumstances involved. Well, how the fuck do you even kill? How do you even plan murdering somebody like that?
I'm opening this as a cold case. Something's going on. It's something's weird. Something's weird in this one.
I don't know. It just seemed very odd. He stayed in from beyond Star Trek Beyond, and then they just didn't recast Chekhov. They just kind of wrote him out. But they haven't made a fourth Star Trek yet anyway, so who knows if it even matters. But anyway. So there's your pop culture corner. As we've now opened, hear Robert Stack's voice in the distance for Unsolved Mystery.
I think we found Bix's next Deadspin story. I'm going to have him look into this.
Christ. Great. 7-hour podcast on fucking tire tracks on a driveway. All right. Let's go back to Hershey, please, and eat a large.
So Randy Savage is pacing around backstage outside of Liz's dressing room. And then we go to Mean Gene, who's with Ted DiBiase, who's showing off his brand new $1 million title valued at $1 million. Gene says Tunney hasn't sanctioned this is a real title. And DiBiase says money matters, not Tunney. DiBiase says the Blue Blazer will fall tonight. Gene then talks to Blazer, getting a rare interview. He says that heavy belt will keep Ted on the ground, and he is going airborne, and DiBiase will go down. That brings us to our next matchup, the Blue Blazer taking on the $1 million man, Ted DiBiase. DiBiase and Virgil strut out as Jesse's gushing over this beautiful new title. Vince said Ted had to buy a title since he couldn't earn one. Blazer comes jogging out, backflips off the top rope, but Ted cuts him down with a hard clothesline. He lands in a great spot. DiBiase mauls Blazer, but Blazer recovers. He gets a pair of near falls with a small package and backslide. Ted lands another clothesline as Jesse says Blazer's not vicious enough to win a match like this. DiBiase lands some more offense until Blazer lands on his feet off a backdrop and dropkicks Ted to the floor. Blazer dives out after Ted and hammers away, and then Atomic drops him into the post. Blazer shoves Ted back inside, hits a high cross body for two. Jesse wonders if the Blazer would get the $1 million title with a win here. Blazer's red hot, unloading drop kicks and uppercuts, getting a two count. Ted grabs a side headlock out of desperation, catches a leaping Blazer with a power slam, and gets the win. A really fun match, breakneck pace. Blazer looked great in there, and he's really shined when he's gotten the time. And Ted was sharp as always. $1 million belt's a cool hook as well. It really gives him something as he's kind of spiraled down the card after SummerSlam, really. And then just kind of doing the Hercules thing, and now really not much else going on. So I thought that was a good way to freshen him up and give him something to crow about additionally. So really fun match, and it makes you wish they do even more with Blazer. We'll see. But I went 2.5 stars on this one, Scott.
Yeah, I gave this 2 stars. I mean, obviously you're dealing with two tremendous workers in Owen Hart and DiBiase. So fun match here. You know, looking back, it's really amazing that, you know, Owen, young guy in his early 20s at this point, you know, the baby of the Hart litter, but obviously, you know, not unfamiliar with dealing with anything in the ring. And DiBiase probably, I'm sure it was a lot of fun for some of these guys backstage, that Brett's little brother's here, because, I mean, they all obviously know that all the Hart brothers, at least the two of them, I won't say everybody, but, you know, the Hart brothers, well-trained and well-schooled and technically sound, at least the two of them. So I'm sure like the DiBiases and a lot of these older guys were looking forward to wrestling Owen and seeing if he's the same as Brett or different than Brett. So having Owen in the company at this time, even if he was just kind of jobbing out as, you know, a masked guy, still must have been a lot of fun for a lot of these guys. And I think we'll see that a big example of that at WrestleMania. But I thought this was a fun match, Peter. You know, nothing earth shattering. I do like the $1 million belt. It's very, very slick looking. It's a good hook for DiBiase. And let me ask you something. Give me your thoughts. You know, give us your thoughts on the match. And why do you think, to back up JR's point, why do you think DiBiase was floating aimlessly? Was it that hard to find opponents for him? I mean, he did have the feud with Hercules, but I agree with JR that he seemed kind of lost after the Megas feud ended. So give us your thoughts on the match, and what are your thoughts on DiBiase and the use of the belt now as kind of a new hook for him?
I don't know. He was in sort of a purgatory, but they always kind of found little things for him to do, like the Royal Rumble. Oh, he buys the number, so you get that little hook there. The Hercules thing was simmering, and then as that's wrapping up, you get, oh, he's going to invest and buy his own belt because he's been thwarted at every turn to get the world title. So the great thing about DiBiase, not only because he was a very good professional wrestler, but also because of the character, there was always something for him, I think, even if it was small. And then once you get to Mania, then you're really going to give him something to do going forward. I love this match. Granted, it's only 2.5 because of how short it is. Because Owen Hart, I talk a lot. I know it's the Blue Blazer, but you know it's Owen Hart, for God's sakes. I talk a lot about Randy Savage being perfect for the Saturday night's main event format because it's a TV match. And it's even more compacted because you have an NBC audience that isn't necessarily as familiar with this. Owen Hart is also great in this format. They don't waste any time at the beginning. He does the flip off the top, and then they go right into the match. The flip to land on his feet in stride by Owen, I had to give him a round of applause in my living room for that. I thought it was funny that they buried the crossbody off the top rope finisher because, you know, the world champion in the other promotion, that's his finisher, Steamboat, in the NWA. But Owen was so incredibly impressive here, but almost too impressive because you think of him, like, during this whole run, all he's doing is he's an enhancement guy for much bigger names, and he's so good at that. Mm-hmm. That it's almost like he's stuck in this role.
Right, yeah. And to me, he's been pigeonholed, yep.
And to me, Ted is Ted. He's just buying time to the next thing. So this made sense for all parties involved. But, man, Owen was really great even then at that young age, being, what was he, 23, 24 years old.
Yeah, and I don't blame him for – I don't remember the exact, you know, reasons why he left, but I don't blame him for doing so. And if it was because he felt like he was getting pigeonholed and wanted to kind of go, you know, get some more experience and then come back eventually, like, it's a smart move. Because it's a great point, Peter, that he's really just being getting so good at putting these guys over. We see it again, you know, WrestleMania, that it made sense for him to go, you know, go work some more around the world, come back with a different gimmick and maybe under his real name and reestablish himself. But it's clear that as this role, it's just not going to get pushed beyond where he's at, but he really is great. I mean, he's been really good in everything. And even his talking, which I think is kind of maligned over there, like he's kind of fine here. Like he's connecting okay at the crowd. And he's just so far ahead of a lot of the other guys on the roster that weren't doing the types of stuff he was doing. It's just, it's like, whoa, when he comes out.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree. Solid match. So now the big linchpin of the show right now, we go to the interview podium, I believe, correct?
And that's where Mean Gene is. He brings out Liz for the big decision. Jesse says, we already know the answer based on the lust between Hogan and Liz. Liz says she has struggled because she cares for both men and hopes she never had to make this decision. She's fretting and stalling, and Gene pushes and pushes for an answer. Liz says she will not be in Hulk Hogan's corner. Savage comes running out, gloating. Everyone's booing. Savage keeps cutting off Liz and shitting on Hogan. And then Liz says, very predictably, I will not be in your corner either. Savage is pissed and says she's out of line. Hogan comes out to save her. Liz is upset as Hogan says he has respect for his manager and he'll wait till WrestleMania to take back his title. So pretty predictable that Liz doesn't want to make a choice here. She obviously still harbors feelings for Savage, given their past and history together. And, of course, is still in love with Hogan as well, whether it's as a brother-sister, like we've learned over the last month, however it is, still has feelings there, too. So she's making the easy choice and just going to stand in the middle, which gives Jesse just machine gun ammo that he loads up over the next month, just basically saying she's a gold digger, just looking to see who's going to win, on and on from there. So we'll see how things go. But this is a pretty effective segment. And I like Savage coming out to celebrate and getting all arrogant and then getting slapped across the face, basically. What'd you guys think of this one?
I like that Liz did a costume change during this because she's wearing something different than mm-hmm. she did when she was out for the Hogan match. I love that Southern Belle Kentucky voice. She doesn't sound as nervous as she has in the past. She's speaking with a little bit more confidence, I think, during this. So I don't know. I'm not saying that they should have used her more, but Savage coming out and being like, yes, you're going to be in my corner. Very reminiscent of Sid a couple of years down the road, except maybe not as funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was necessary. I mean, we needed to push this along. And now from here, I mean, this is the last national platform before WrestleMania. Now we'll head, well, national broadcast. I mean, we obviously got a couple of prime times, so there's some Cindy stuff, and we'll get into that soon. So, you know, this is still moving along very well. But it's just not making any fucking sense. I mean, it's not making any sense. I don't know where they got that. And we'll get more into this when we do the build episode in a few weeks. But this just made no fucking sense. I mean, I don't understand how this makes Savage look like a bad guy. Like, I don't get it. What are we supposed to be believing here? Hogan came out. I mean, Elizabeth came out with him. Like, what the fuck? Like, I don't get it. What should have happened was Savage should have had a match and Hogan should have had a match and should have came out with both of them and then figure out what to do. Instead, Savage is like skulking around like a lunatic and she just goes out with Hogan like, hey, everything's fine. Like the whole thing made no fucking sense.
Well,
like, the whole
know.
Thing is just utterly illogical. It really is. But I mean, I don't want
to
get into that.
Well, I think
now.
She wants to still kind of be with both of them. But Savage is almost like you have to choose and Hogan's basically like you don't. You know, I think it's that kind of thing, right, where Savage is making her make a choice. And she doesn't want to because she cares about both of them. It's not her fault that, you know, her decision to break up.
Yeah, like I said, Hogan's a sensitive new age guy. And on the flip side, Savage threw her into a fucking wall the last
that
time on
well,
the main
yes.
event. So, yeah, you have to consider that.
But, you know, he deserted his best friend so he could touch her ass because the EMTs weren't good enough to. we should tell Steve Willey the fucking Milwaukee EMTs were a bunch of losers and just left her crumpled body on the floor, apparently, on the ground, apparently. But. I don't know. We'll get more into the meat and potatoes of this when we do the build show. But it still just was the logic was just not totally there, in my opinion. But anyway, the promos were good. Savage is fucking a lunatic, and that's what he's good at. So, it looked good. Kept things going.
All right, Gene's backstage with Bobby Heenan and the Brainbusters. Bobby says to get rid of the Rockers tonight. Tully says they will deliver the titles, and the path starts here tonight. Arn puts over the partnership and calls it a division of labor. Gene is in with the Rockers, who are making their Saturday's Main Event debut, actually. Kind of surprising, since they've been around for a bit. So Michael says they have been waiting for this match, and they'll keep it in the ring and take care of it this time, referencing their, I think it was, what, double countout last time we saw them. So that was kind of cool that they referenced the MSG match, or probably every match they've had around the horn. Marty says Marty things. So that brings us to our next big match, highly anticipated again. The Rockers taking on the Brainbusters. The Busters jog out with Bobby to booze, followed by big cheers for the Rockers. Bobby runs interference to start. The Busters lay the wood. Things quickly spin around into a pier six. The Busters get cleared out. We reset. Arn tries to come in off the top, but Sean catches him, slams him, and twists him into a Boston Crab. Tully comes in as well. The Rockers clean them both out again. Sean suplexes Tully back in, unloads a flurry. Tully tags Arn, but Sean keeps tripped up into a front face lock. Arn finally catches him with a boot and traps him in the corner, and then gets an assist from Bobby, who hooks the top rope, and Sean careens to the floor. The ref tosses Heenan, and after a break, Jannetty is in control, but Arn gets a blind tag, cuts him down with a sledge to the chest. The Busters control, quick tagging and slugging away, baiting Sean in along the way so they could double team and cheat efficiently. The Busters fight through a comeback, leading to an Arn spinebuster for two. Arn eats knees on a splash. Marty makes the hot tag. Sean cleans house to a pop, and then things break down with all four brawling in and out of the ring. And again, leading to a double countout. The Rockers dominate the post-match brawl, wiping both Brainbusters out with double drop kicks. Really fun match. Great execution. Four tag team experts, and it showed premium selling, double teaming, and cheap tactics. And I really hope this is a feud that continues as both teams kind of rise up the ladder. And you almost hate to see any of them lose. So, like, I don't hate the double countouts here. But at some point, something's going to give. So I went 3 stars on this. Again, you kind of get the truncated Saturday's Main Event piece to it. But overall, it's a really good match. One of the better ones we've seen on the show since its inception. And it's just been a great feud for both teams. What do you think, Peter?
This was amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any talking point among the internet wrestling community that I want to just tackle head on and rip apart, it's this notion, you know, parroted by some corners that, oh, Arn and Tully were an odd fit in the WWF and it never worked. It's like, no, they weren't. Watch this match and you will see that greatness always finds a way. Because this is just amazing. Even though Shawn Michaels does a pretty shitty-looking Boston Crab, he then makes up for it by going 140 miles an hour over the top rope when Heenan pulls down the rope. I liked how Jesse justified the ejection of Heenan from ringside. Like, well, this gives Heenan more time to get the brawler ready for his match against the Rooster. Like, well, he's gonna help the other guy, and that, like, well, how are the Brainbusters gonna do without Heenan there at ringside? I was a little bothered by the referee counting the fall when Arn did the blind tag on a sunset flip, but this match overall. I've often thought about it as, is there a better TV match during that era with a schmoz, quote-unquote, finish of a double countout? I don't even care that it's a double countout. I know Piper and Orndorff did a similar match on a Saturday Night's Main Event back, I want to say, 85 or early 86.
It was 86. 85, yeah. That's the one where they – it's 85. It's one where they chase them down the hallway and fucking Piper hides in the – Yeah. That was a great match,
that,
too.
That only got about 4 or 5 minutes, and this one came in at, what, about nine. Or 10? Yeah. I mean, this was just great stuff. It's 4 stars easy.
Love it.
It was exceptional.
Just to circle back to your point earlier, Peter, this is probably the one year the Brainbusters would have fit in the best in-ring-wise until, like, later, like 2000s or whatever. But, I mean, if you look at the teams that were all in there at this point, and the plethora of teams they had to work with, I would say it's definitely the perfect time for them to have come in and fit in beautifully, 88 to 89. I mean, that's if there was one year you could plug them in, this is it, right? Unless you want to say maybe like 85 because of the Bulldogs. But I this is like the most stocked the tag division gets for the WWF. So I think it was the perfect time for them to be there.
Yep. No, I agree. But a great match. And they've been on fire all over the region. I mean, again, we caught a good MSG match. They had a great match in Boston. They're on fire. They're on fire. And they've just proven how great the tag division is right now and how finely loaded it is.
Any thoughts on the match?
So, there we go. That was my comment. I mean, they were just amazing. I gave it 3 stars. I realized I didn't give them my grade. Yeah, 3 stars. They're awesome. I mean, they're fucking awesome. All 4 guys, you've got the Brainbusters just good at controlled chaos, and the Rockers just throw themselves all over the place. It's one of the few times that maybe Rude Beefcake earlier, not as much, but it's one of the few times that we've watched JR a house show match and then the same teams or guys in a TV match, and the quality didn't really change. Usually the TV match, like the Saturday main event, usually obviously is dummied down. They didn't dummy down here. This felt like maybe there was some more TV spots, but it still felt like it could have been a house show match easily. And you don't see that a lot in this era, a match that good translating from local house show to Saturday's main event or, national. So fantastic match. 3 stars. Can't say enough about it.
All right, we get clips of the recent issues between Bobby Heenan, the Red Rooster, and the Brooklyn Brawler, and Jesse is then with Bobby and the Brawler. They reveal that Bobby has to face the Red Rooster at WrestleMania. Jesse says Bobby's been provoked and asks why this match is going down tonight. Bobby shits on the Rooster, calling him a nobody, says Brawler's bigger, better, bigger and better nobody, and will handle the Rooster tonight. If he embarrasses Bobby, he'll be back on the streets of Brooklyn. We talked about this a lot last week, Scott. An odd fucking feud this has been, where basically it's just like the race to the bottom. No, you suck, Rooster, but this guy sucks a little bit less. The Brooklyn Brawler is pretty much what the feud is. Gene's with Rooster, says Brawler is a nobody and he's a somebody, and when he beats the Heenan family, he'll also beat Bobby Heenan tonight and at Mania. If anyone should have been crying in a promo, it's not Hogan. It should be fucking Terry Taylor during this one. Who's like, I'm a somebody. I'm real. I'm a man. Basically what he's saying.
Good enough. I'm smart enough. And doggone it, people like
people
me.
People like me.
Right? God, it's so fucking pathetic. Like, I'm not a nobody. Anyway, that brings us to our main event, our last match of the night, the Red Rooster and the Brooklyn Brawler. Wrap the things up with this fucking feud. Vince confirms that Liz will be in the neutral corner at Mania, so that's a done deal. Rooster pecks out to the ring, but the Brawler takes quick control, claws and slugs away. Rooster dodges a charge, lands a dropkick, and gets a small package for the win. Rooster cocks around like he won the fucking Super Bowl, and then he calls for Bobby. I mean, he leaps in the air. Like, it's just the biggest win of his career that he beat the fucking Brooklyn Brawler. Brawler clotheslines him from behind. Him and Bobby beat Rooster down until he bows up and clears him out. Nothing here, just to build heat. Rooster is just lost. He sucks. Half a star. There's some guys when you revisit, historically, you can kind of say, oh, they were underrated, or this wasn't as bad as you would have thought. But yeah, the Rooster stuff is as bad as legend has it. It is not good. The gimmick is terrible, and the feud itself is awful. You can see why it was such a stain on Taylor's career. I don't think per se that Taylor, I would say he hasn't helped himself with a lot of this, but this was not, obviously the match we talked about last week, Scott, I thought was fine, the MSG one. And I believe that was more Brawler 1, right? If I'm getting this all straight.
Yes.
So Rooster gets a modicum of revenge here with this quick win, and I guess that's his big celebration for it. But anyway, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, this is garbage. I gave it a star. I'm probably being generous. It was kind of garbage. It was crap, and nobody cares. I mean, just to get Bobby in the ring again. I mean, obviously, he's, I don't know if he's wrestled on the house show circuit since the whole dog collar thing at WrestleMania 4. It was rough. It was rough, Peter. One star.
Well, this is dog shit or rooster shit or whatever. But inspired by last week's podcast and some comments made about the Red Rooster's hair, I wrote a song.
Ooh.
In honor of this feud. So it's to the tune of O-Tannenbaum. O-Tampon Head, O-Tampon Head, the brain bestowed his grace on thee. You are the cock of the walk, but the shit I shall mock. O-Tampon Head, O-Tampon Head, the brain bestowed his grace on thee.
I was hoping you would end with your nominations couldn't even get to three in the GWE.
Hey, I spent a good 90 seconds writing these lyrics earlier today.
It was well executed.
Thank you. The less said about Terry Taylor, the better.
Fuck him.
Yeah.
All right, Gene is with Savage in the bathroom. Savage is all over the place, says he doesn't need Liz. He destroys the room, throwing around everything and tearing his shirt off. And then Jesse and Vince wrap things up. So why don't we go ahead and get over to our awards before we close down shop here tonight. Match of the night, I think, is quite an easy choice, and that would be Rockers versus the Brainbusters.
Correct.
It's funny, that was a bit of a Holy Grail match. Like, back in the 90s when, like, Saturday's Main Event wasn't easily accessible, because, by the time I started watching, like, I hadn't taped them all or anything, they didn't really air or show them. And I remember they had those two Coliseum videos, the Best of Saturday's Main Event and kind of the more of the Best of Saturday's Main Event. And I remember, like, Rockers Brainbusters was one of those. And when my cousin finally tracked it down, it was, like, such a huge get to be able to see that match. So it's cool to kind of see it now with such ease and just how good it was. Cousin Junior, again, I think is a pretty easy choice. That would be the Rooster versus the Brawler.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, the Andre the Giant MVP of the evening. I went Ted DiBiase. I thought he looked great in that match, hanging with the Blazer. I liked the promo. I liked all the stuff with the $1 million belt. I don't think anyone else really stood out above and beyond. I mean, I guess you could have maybe said Liz, but I thought DiBiase was really damn good on this one.
Yes, I agree. I concur.
I'd really love to go DiBiase, but I got to go with my boy Bad News Brown.
Yeah, another good choice. Yeah.
For his character work.
Okay. No, it's another good one. Neck and neck. Mm-hmm. All right, the Sandy Beach at least MVP. I went worst worker. I went the Brooklyn Brawler. I mean, just whatever on this night.
Yeah, he's garbage.
Rooster's probably sadder, but I think Brawler's worse than him.
Yeah, it's a fucking jobber guy. I mean, it's pathetic. Yeah.
Yeah. I went with Tampon Head.
Okay. Same thing. He was going to make me do this extra writing, Peter.
Sorry.
And you're making him type Tampon Head.
And by the way, when we get to, is the Patera Award up next?
Not yet. No, we're getting there.
Because you can use Control C for that. Control C, Control V.
All right, we have best moments. I went with the Hogan Savage confrontation.
It's a big deal. It's a linchpin of the show.
Yeah, you know what? I'll go with that too. Even as much as I'd like to say Bad News Brown calling his spot over the house mic.
Well, that factors into his MVP award for you. So,
Yes.
All right, the Morocco Award for the biggest juice head of the night. I went with Brutus Beefcake. I thought he looked extra gassed here this evening.
Yes, I agree.
Again, I always feel bad not picking Hogan because I feel like he could just win it emeritus. But I feel like I like to mix it up, and a Beefcake just looked really juiced up.
Yeah, hey, Hogan looked like water bloated tonight. Mm. Like Beefcake looked like jacked, but Hogan looked like just kind of like puffed out.
Hogan would like nothing better than for us to throw something Beefcake's way. So I will throw my award at Beefcake. Yes.
Yes.
All right, the Patera Award for the worst hair. I indeed also went with the Red Rooster, second show in a row. Scott?
Yeah, I mean, Rude's hair was, yeah, that was pretty much it. Everybody else's hair was pretty much the same.
Rooster.
Even Jeb. When are we eventually going to start jabbing Jesse when he's bald?
Pretty soon.
You know,
Rude at least used a full body conditioner.
Yes. Rooster may have too, just in a different way.
Yeah, yes. But oh, come on.
Cock in a bottle. All right, let's go with our overall grade of the night. So not quite the 10 that we had on our last show, but still a pretty solid show. Lots going on. Good hype for Mania, our final one before Atlantic City. And I thought there was enough here, plus a couple of really good matches, to take me to a 5.5.
I'll go with that, too. Kind of down the middle. And honestly, the only trash match was the... You know what? I'll give it a 6. I'll give it a 6. The only real trash match was the last match. The other four were all good in some certain way. Everybody had their boots on tonight. But, that brawler match, the brawler rooster was garbage. But the other four matches were actually pretty good. A very balanced... It wasn't as good as the main event because that was just epic. But I'll give it a 6. Good in-ring work tonight. Not often for a Science main event, top to bottom. Peter?
I'm going 7.5 because I love this. Between Bad News and Hogan, the DiBiase and Blazer Sprint, and Rockers Brainbusters might be the best tag match in the history of this series. So I'm surprised you guys didn't go higher.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what held me back on that match. I don't know. I went 3 on it. Maybe I guess underrated it a bit. I mean, 5.5. You know, I'm going to bump to 6 thinking about it. Like, I was actually surprised I looked down at 5.5. Man, I was just in the mood watching the show. But I wonder if the audio affected it, too. The audio was really bad on this.
It was
tough to listen to. But, yeah, no, yeah. I agree. I can't go too high only because the storylines have already kind of been established. It definitely did not have the energy that the main event did, but... Peter, that tag match is tremendous. If maybe we had one more match that got over to a 3, I might have gone to a 7, but I'm happy with a 6.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that'll do it for that. Now, Scott, as we mentioned, this is our final episode before WrestleMania weekend. We'll talk about it on the rest of our shows, but we do have a large group coming together in New York City / New Jersey next weekend. Many of us headed to NXT. Most of us headed to WrestleMania. And, of course, we're kind of split on all the other stuff. We are joining the Mania Club tailgate party on Sunday, outsourcing this year for the PTB gathering. So there's still time to sign up for that if you want to meet up and join us. Or if you're going to be out in the town Friday or Saturday and want to try and find our group and hang out and say hi, be sure to reach out to us on social media, and we'll get you hooked up with the crew. Peter, we mentioned you'll be there, so looking forward to meeting you in person finally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. And of course, Scott, I'll be seeing you from the majority of the weekend.
Yes.
So we're really looking forward to that. Speaking of Mania weekend, Scott, I believe you have your special main event preview. That's next week now or this week?
Yes. No, it's next Wednesday. It's going to be loaded. We're going to have a ton of guys on and gals on this one. Gals on the postmortem, but not gals on the preview. And we're going to preview, of course, TakeOver, Mania. We'll discuss Hall of Fame briefly. But most definitely, we're going to get into the New Japan Ring of Honor show Saturday night at the Garden, because we're going to have a couple people on that are going. So we'll have a good discussion on that. But, yeah, we're going to cover everything. That'll be next Wednesday.
All right, very cool. And as I mentioned, should have a new Wrestling War Zone, I believe, next week with me and Chad wrapping up 95 with Starrcade. So be sure to check that out. And I'll also do a soft tease. I'm not going to reveal what, but maybe crossing over feeds this week. So stay tuned to the pop feed and make it a little... treat from old JTR. Peter, what do you got going on?
Well, greetings from Allentown this Thursday. Well, the last show that I had out is a UWF Bill Watts style from 1987, so do check that out. this Thursday, World Class Championship Wrestling, October 16th, 1982, the debut of Michael P.S. Hayes. So, yes, the Freebirds are about to take the state of Texas in World Class by storm. And give me a follow on Twitter, at GF Allentown Pod.
And if you want to read about it before you listen to it, I believe, Scott, that was one of the ones we did on the old Network Adventure.
Yes, we did.
We're
That's right.
Yes. World Classes, yep. So. Cover that. All right. Also, be sure to get involved in our GWE pay-per-view TV match project. You can go over to Facebook, search that, or just follow us on any social media, or bigelow34@pro-words.com is the list for the nominees and a thread for feedback and, you know, match reviews. There's a bunch of guys in there, you know, watching matches and giving their thoughts. So it should be a lot of fun. It's basically just get to watch a bunch of wrestling matches and then eventually by the end of the year submit a list for your top 100 televised / pay-per-view WWE matches of all time. So a lot of fun so far. More to come there. All right. For Peter and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. Be sure to follow us on social media. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BeNation, and Instagram, PlaceToBeNation as well. We'll talk to you soon, everyone. Hopefully we'll see most of you in the city. Otherwise, we'll be back in a few weeks looking at the 318-89 MSG House Show. Everyone, take care.
I believe Peter's song will be on the next Pop Culture Corner with Electric Youth.
I believe you're a fucking idiot, Chris Golo. See you at Yale.
Thanks, guys. I got to drop off because I got my draft going now. So. Now I can still remember when we first met each other. Exchange numbers, promise we won't forget each other. So the work is cool, that's cool, no doubt. That's why a nigga went that route. Uniform for clocker, shorty looking proper. She's out to get me, can't stop her. Know I had a lover, yo, still went for her. Even copped a bit of kicks on the strength for her. Yo, chatted, talked about, see you later. From that moment on, I knew that I had to hate her. Couldn't conversate long, shorty had to go back to work. Something inside said, gotta work. I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. I swear to God, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. I swear to God, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. I found a good one with chicks, cause they be too demanding. Especially the ones that's never understanding. Like, where you was at, where you going, who you out with. Them same niggas I make moves and I shout with. Don't let these niggas in the street gas your head up. Like they can do better than me, plus I'm fed up. I had to tell my main chick that one time. Thinking to me short, she thought that I'm some clown nigga she could scream on and talk to. I had to run her down the line, this ain't no walkthrough. Now who the fuck you think you talking to, chick? Your complaint is making me sick. Understand, man, I try to do my thing. You understand, I play the puppet on the string. Like I say, every day be careful, my friend. Good things always come to an end. So, yo, I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. That's where the moms, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. Yo, I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. That's where the moms, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. See, the ruler of the sales that I really do care. But I'm not afraid to go there. Very unselfish, ain't just I do share. You can have your fits, but you get nowhere. Work. See, we gave this air, try after try. It's a done deal, now I'm here. All I try to do is keep you satisfied. Never dealing with no others, I try. Too many threats, kid, gotta let her go. Always in your corner, gotta let her know. As I grab my board and painfully walk out. Hands about to give, we talk out. I'm feeling pain as it came to an end. I said to shorty, I will always be your friend. Now if you ever need me, I will be right there. I ain't going nowhere. Real. I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. This world of arms, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. Yo, I can't escape.